He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday edition, the Happy Friday edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. We're going to have some fun here on today's show. There's a lot of good stories to talk about, and we are up quite a bit off of that low that we hit about the time I put out the buy signal on the market, the compelling buy signal. Right now, the Dow is up. It's actually down. The Dow's down 143. We have a mixed market today. But the NASDAQ is up another 87. The S&P 500 is up 10 points. The Russell 2000 is up about 1% right now. Oil is about even. I'm happy to see it under 100. Okay, that's a welcome sign. I think it's at 98 something. Let's see, $98.31. We had a fairly good CPI report this morning, a little cooler than expected. That's good. And that's got the 10-year at 4.31 right now. 4.31. Gold is very quiet today. It's about even. It's at 4,801. Silver not doing much. And last but not least, good old Bitcoin. Bitcoin is up 1691 to 72,430. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. We are back from Sarasota. Now, I did it by air. And you did it by land. Did we have anybody come back by sea? I was going to send somebody by rowboat, if slow rowboat, that is. But we made it back. How was the drive back there, Barry?
Yeah, not bad. Of course, gas prices were still about the same whenever I drove down. We're unleaded in our vehicle, but I looked at certainly keeping my eye on diesel as we went around. But you know, uniquely, like you said, we got the core CPI this morning, and at least the core was tamer than expected. So
yes, and when I got to the airport, or actually before I left for the airport yesterday, the market was up about it wasn't up that much. We had a good day yesterday. The Dow did
in the right
up,
places.
Yes, in the right places. Ended up 58 basis points. The Nasdaq was up 83 basis points. And when we touched down, in the evening, we were basically where we started the day. There was very little movement during the day, which is good because I did not have internet on the connector flight, and I wasn't able to send out any messages. But there was nothing to buy or sell yesterday at all.
They've got to get better. They've got to get better on that internet sometimes on the plane. It's great when you have it. It's just, you nowadays you run onto that one plane and it's like, no internet. And, you're caught in a vacuum for however long you're on there.
The planes that go from Atlanta to Charleston are like from World War II. They're way old planes. I mean, really old.
They're not big.
No, it's the budget flight. Forget internet. You're just lucky if it gets off the ground and makes it to Charleston safely. Everybody kind of has to push a little bit, lean forward. That Delta needs to upgrade their fleet a little bit. U.S. stocks gained for a second day. That was yesterday. Today's the third day, if you're counting just the NASDAQ. U.S.-Iran resolution, still uncertain, but it doesn't sound like there's been much happening as far as shooting and blowing things up here yesterday. It's a bumpy path. You've got J.D. Vance over there right now in Pakistan. And in the meantime, all U.S. ships, aircraft, military personnel, and anything else that's appropriate necessary for the lethal prosecution and destruction of an already substantially degraded enemy will remain in place in and around Iran until such time as the real agreement reached is fully complied with. So that's where we are, and that's why you were paying such high gas prices yesterday. It's called the Strait of Hormuz, which all of a sudden has become the center point of the universe. You can look at a globe and you can put a pin right there in that Strait of Hormuz. It's upsetting the whole entire world right now. Stock index futures were up this morning. Of course, the NASDAQ is up 87 points as core CPI comes in slightly cooler. Okay, that's good. Headline CPI, including food and energy, 0.9% month over month, and 0.3% in February, and that was a little bit under the consensus. Overall, it came in at 3.3% year over year, and the consensus was 3.4%. So that's a favorable CPI report. That's helping the market. And where does that help the market? Mostly in the multiple. Mostly in the multiple. And we are seeing, it'll be interesting to see, I think we're back above 20 in the S&P 500. We got down to 19.8 here recently. 19.77, I think, was the low. And, of course, that made the market a pretty good buy at that level. We'll probably end the day, I think we'll be somewhere around 20.5 or something. And then earnings season really starts to kick in next week. It was notable, however. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, talking about earnings, that it, you know, actually it surprised me. This morning, first thing I read was, waking up early, was TSM came out with some of their revenue. And of course, you know, next week ASML comes out, so we're already. It seems like we just ended earnings season, let's get back in the thick of it. I guess.
I mean, and it seems like we get back from a trip, and it'll be 3 or 4 weeks, so we'll be headed out on another one. We're going to Minnesota this time, Minneapolis.
Yeah,
and then
TSM's revenue is up 45% year
yes.
over year,
and they didn't really report earnings. It was just a sales. They do that a lot with companies.
Yep.
And, yes, they continue. The chip sector continues to be the hottest sector in the market. And once again, yesterday, you had that story of AI disrupting software companies big time. Every software stock in the market sold off, the cyber stocks particularly, and even Palantir, which is now breaking down below its support level, is caught up in it, the best software stock out there. So all of a sudden you've got these software stocks, Qualys, Cloudflare, Tenable, Zscaler, CrowdStrike, Palo Alto Networks, you name it, and they were all down. And that software sector, IGV, is now down 28% year-to-date.
And wow.
That points out the fact that the tech sector is a big sector, and you have a lot of subcategories in the sector, and that's one of the next projects with the app, is to break down more the big sectors into the subsectors. For instance, technology has the chips, it has software, it has software equipment making, it has database, it has fiber optics.
That last one has been the new buzzword has been optics.
Yes,
and
it has.
Optics. You look at that's where your names that you've been mentioning, and of course adding to and buying some new positions this week. You know, whether it was Lumentum. Yep, and a lot of those names. The key buzzword I keep hearing now is optics. Optics.
Yeah, and I think really and truly, I think they have that in the telecom sector. That's how Investor's Business Daily has it. They have
right.
it in telecom, the big sector, and then the subsector, fiber optics. But I consider it tech. I mean, it's right there in this AI boom that's taking place.
Yeah, Lumentum is not AT&T.
No, no. Way. Look at the stock. I mean, that's one of the hottest stocks in AAOI and Ciena. And, you know, the other one is Marvell Technologies. Marvell is on fire right now, MRVL, which makes chips, fiber optic chips. So they're in a sweet spot in the market right now also, as it's all about speed, getting that answer back when you make that query on whatever AI you're using. You want that answer back right away, and it's all about speed, and that's where the NVIDIA chips and the fiber optics, and even copper. We had a discussion with someone we met with in Sarasota a couple days ago about copper and the need for copper and the voltage that it's able to carry that fiber optics isn't. We'll be right back.
I'm your native son. The train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Oh, we're going on. What are you
Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Oil is set for the steepest weekly drop since June of last year, despite supply-driven Friday bounce. Well, you're not really getting much of a bounce there, just a tiny little bit. Oil has come down very, very hard here this past week. That hasn't quite translated to the gas pump yet, but maybe it will. I did notice in the Sarasota area, unleaded was 455. Is that about where it was, Barry, as you filled up coming home? 455, somewhere like that for unleaded?
Yeah, mostly, you know, for regular unleaded, you know, we're still seeing prices under four, of course. You know, for whatever reason, okay. Got to put the premium in. So yeah, it was more like 450, 460. But yeah, yeah. Still under $4 for you know, 87 unleaded. Like I said, the biggest thing that I see obviously is on the diesel end. The longer that diesel stays as high as it is, then you know the diesel affects everything. And so it's interesting. You know, the price of diesel and fuel actually affects, you know, fertilizer, everything from fertilizer, livestock, getting this, you know, getting vegetables delivered to the, you know, to the store. So, I've got my, what I keep my eye on certainly is diesel. So we'll see how that goes.
And I'm sure it affects this 60-foot trawler that's headed down the river right now that I can see from my office.
Well, and I was looking at the CPI numbers underneath the hood, right, where we, you know, going through the different items underneath the CPI, and you know, honestly, everything was fairly, you know, fairly tame. Even food at home, right, was down 0.2%. You know, utility gas, right? So think of natural gas was down 0.9. Really the only top line driver of CPI was fuel. I mean, you know, anything, gasoline was up 18.9%, fuel oil up, you know, up 30%.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the stuff they strip out. That's why core actually was lower. Versus the top line number was high, so we'll see where things go. I mean, we know it's going to go down.
There is a little good news: Russia and Ukraine are agreeing to a ceasefire for Orthodox Easter. The Orthodox Easter is a week after the traditional, more traditional, I guess, you know, Christian. Not that Orthodox aren't Christian, but they celebrate it this week instead of last week.
Yeah. And, different calendar,
I just all those bodies. Ezekiel saw the valley of dry bones and the flesh coming back on the bones and everything like that. And well, they're going to have a ceasefire for Orthodox Easter, and someday all those bones will be put back together again at the resurrection. U.S. EU move closer to critical mineral pact to counter Beijing's dominance. And I've seen some action today in USAR, which is U.S. Rare Earth. CRML is having a good day. That's the Greenland one. MP Materials is having a good day. That has really taken a back burner position in the market, the rare earth, when it was a front burner issue, especially during the negotiations with China on the tariffs. What they had, their biggest bargaining chip was rare earth, really. And I think just like with Iran, their biggest bargaining chip is that Strait of Hormuz. That's their ace up their sleeve that they're using to bargain with. But, you know, the rare earth has gone to the back burner. The need for rare earth hasn't diminished at all. But they're getting close to making some kind of an agreement between the U.S. and the EU, because both of us need those rare earths, some kind of pact to counter Beijing's dominance in that area. Elon Musk, SpaceX, reportedly generated $18 billion in revenue in 2025. $18 billion. So if it goes public at $1.8 trillion, with $1.8 billion in revenue, what is that price to sales number? Like 10,000 to 1 or something?
I was. It's funny that you said that. I was literally, the last thing I saw before I put my head on the pillow last night was this story about the revenue. And I was in my head, I'm thinking, divide 18.5. It's about, you know, I think I figured it was. It's roughly about 90 times, maybe a little more, 90 sales. Times revenues. Yeah, wow. Times sales, not times earnings, times sales. Wow. And so I figured, you know, as we were talking with folks in Sarasota this week, we were talking, you know, SpaceX obviously comes up, and I know you and Jordan have been doing some work on it, and, you know, it doesn't seem like the best deal potentially out there. And so of course I saw this number and all I could think about was those conversations that you guys were having about it.
burning your money in outer space is where we're headed with it all. But you know what? He is a big, big promoter, and I'm sure that there will be a big demand for the IPO. And I'm sure that it will come out at a very high price, and then watch out, because then the numbers start to come out. We get a glimpse, the public gets a glimpse into the numbers behind the curtain, and it's got to be pretty grim with the cash burn, the money he needs to spend, and whether or not the logistics of it all works out. Here's a good one. Ares Management plans a $20 billion private credit fund. Barry, let's call up and get a prospectus on that and see if it's appropriate for our... Oh, my gosh. They're sounding out investors for a direct lending fund with the preliminary target size of $20 billion, A-R-E-S. And I also saw that Carlyle Group is getting hit big time with redemption requests.
Oh, I saw that. Yep. Yeah, and the interesting thing, is where the redemptions are happening, right? I think in terms of... You know, as you go back to the mortgage crisis, it was the subprime mortgage piece of the mortgage industry that really brought it down. And in this case, you know, it really is, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show about software companies not doing well, it's really the software portion of this private credit stuff is what is going to blow up.
Yes, and look at how bad the software, down 28% year to date as a group, and yesterday they got slammed, and they're getting slammed again today, and here they are coming out with a new offering of $20 billion in a private credit fund brought to you by the folks at Ares Management, A-R-E-S, on the NASDAQ. CoreWeave prices an upsized $3.5 billion convertible senior notes offering, and we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of debt financing by these big AI companies. CoreWeave's having a good day, however, because they do a multi-year data center deal with Anthropic. And we talked a lot about that in Sarasota. The money that is being thrown at the AI sector by these big private companies, Anthropic, OpenAI, etc. And it's being thrown at companies like Core Weave. We'll be right back.
Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. The next story I want to talk about here, Meta has an app out now for AI. So their version, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. With OpenAI, ChatGPT, Gemini, Anthropic, Grok, who will the survivors be? And then there's a lot of second-tier ones out there also. Meta app downloads on the App Store surge after Muse Spark AI model. It is the first AI model developed by the company's super intelligence team. Barry, you had to be super intelligent to be on that team.
Yeah, I was
not intelligent, super intelligent.
I was going to say, do we have a, what division is that at our firm?
That leaves me out. That's all firm. I know. Yeah. You know, I'd be cut out of that. Anyway.
If you're not on the super intelligence team, then you don't know about it, I guess, right?
But I want to make a point. A point here with Meta stock, and compare it to others that, you know, Meta was reeling about maybe 3 weeks ago when that lawsuit came down against them that they were using addictive practices. I believe that was in New Mexico, and the big jury award, and then there was another jury award in Los Angeles, and the stock was just plummeting, right?
Within hours of each other, those verdicts came out, remember?
Yes. Yes. And the stock broke support, much like Palantir is right now. I've just found over time that the good stocks, the really good ones, eventually bounce. And even though the charts look very ugly at that period of time, I did sell our Meta at that period of time because we didn't really know. You had a falling knife there. And you really don't know how much liability they have.
Yeah, you didn't want it to be a Johnson & Johnson baby powder situation, or you referenced big tobacco, and and then of course the Roundup lawsuits. You didn't know it was going to happen. You didn't want to be involved with it.
Yes, exactly, and Palantir. But I just noticed that over the years, the good ones eventually bounce hard to the upside. They do not continue to plummet unless there's something very, very wrong, which I don't think there's something very, very wrong with Palantir. I think it's mostly this fear over AI. Do you think AI is going to replace what Palantir does? But it gets caught up in the selling of all the other software stocks. So you face a very difficult decision. As whether or not to run and panic, and somebody did send me an email, should we sell Palantir here? I said, well, you can do whatever you want with it, but I send out an alert if I sell it. I honestly haven't decided yet. But I do know that, generally speaking, the really good stocks eventually bounce pretty hard, and if you're selling right when they break support, a lot of times that's the low, right? You're selling right at the low. So that's part of being a money manager, the decisions that I have to make on a weekly basis. Now, on a daily basis, actually. The other one that was reeling, just reeling, Microsoft. Because let's not forget that at its core, Microsoft is a software company. Now, it has a lot of other products, like, you know, the gaming and everything like that. But at its core, it's the biggest software company in the world at $2.7 trillion in market cap. Microsoft has gone from 553, clear down to 373. It's down 35% since last October, and that's pretty much in line with where the software sector is. It's down 28% since the beginning of the year. And I would say Microsoft, yeah, let's see, from 490 down to 370, yeah, it's down about 25% since the beginning of the year. It has had a few bounces along the way, but the biggest problem with Microsoft and when they don't bounce is when the upside potential isn't there. And when I looked at the upside potential on Microsoft, I think it was 47% when we wrote our article about Microsoft. And we put out a sell rating on it. And I think just a couple weeks ago, it was on the cover of Barron's, which is a notorious value investing strategy publication. And they said, just shut up and buy it. And, well, okay, the upside potential over the next 5 years is 47%. That's an F value grade. And you look at this chart on Microsoft, I call that chart dead in the water. Dead in the water. DITW is just like, poof, wow, flat and going nowhere. So, you know, that's something else you have to weigh. And when you read Barron's and you say, wow, this is their best, they think there's a compelling buy here. I love having my Best Stocks Now app to turn to. And I look at the track record, which is just, it's okay on Microsoft. It's not as good as it used to be. But the valuation, I was shocked to see 46% upside potential on Microsoft. So, obviously, we have no interest. And the third part of that equation is the chart. And the chart is DITW, dead in the water, which I passed a few boats at the entrance to the harbor that are dead in the water. That's not a good place to be, dead in the water. The entrance to the harbor, there's some swells, there's some cross currents and whatnot, and people waving their arms, oh, help, I'm headed for the rocks, because on either side of the harbor you have jetties, you have rock jetties. I anchor about 15 feet from, I don't anchor, I have trolling motors, heavy-duty trolling motors, and it keeps me 15 feet away from those rocks, Barry, so I can just hit it with a nice little cast with a live shrimp and get it in those rocks, but that's
yep.
That's a difficult area to fish if you don't know how to navigate a boat very well. Most people still using anchors.
You got a lot of cross current. You got a lot of cross current underneath there too,
and
depending on if the tide's going out or not, when
that tide starts ripping. We were sitting out there one day. I was with a fishing guide. It was when I first moved here. I figured, you know what? I'm going to go with a fishing guide, a professional. I am a do-it-yourselfer too, but when it comes to, I'm from the opposite coast from here. I came clear across country. I don't know the fishing out here like I do know it in San Diego. And I hired a fishing guide, and we were sitting there at the said jetty, not doing much of anything. And all of a sudden, the tide started ripping. He says, we got to go inshore. And he took us up a little creek. Without a paddle. No, he had a paddle. It was shallow, and we caught about 7 or 8 redfish, all between 8 to 12 pounds, in 3 feet of water on a live shrimp. Oh, man. Ho-ho. That's when I kind of decided to move to Charleston, was right then. And
yeah. Well, in those in that shallow water, they can't go down. They just go.
They go out.
Over and left.
They know
so
how to run.
It's a fun fight. Yeah, they do.
Those redfish, they're brutal fighters. They really are.
Yeah.
So, and we threw them all back. We didn't keep any. I'm pretty much a catch and release guy. I think they were all too big to keep anyways. They have to be under a certain size limit, and they have to be over. Even though black and red fish is certainly a good dish, right? Okay, let's go to the
next one. They call it a slot redfish, and it's a very limited range. So it's got to be the perfect fish. Otherwise, it's too big or too small. Yeah,
and there's very few of those slot redfish around.
Right,
they're all either underneath or big, because everybody keeps the ones that are slot sized. That's the way that goes. It's not working out the way they had planned. Okay, let's. There's a couple other stocks here. We talked about Microsoft. I want to talk next about. NVIDIA-backed Lumentum. This was the story we were talking about. We've already made a ton of money in Lumentum, and I sold it. I thought, this is just a little bit overheated here. But it is backed by NVIDIA, and they see the AI boom keeping orders full through 2028. So let me just look at the chart right now. LITE, it's one of the hottest stocks in the entire market. And there are other fiber optic stocks. Lumentum is hitting a new 52-week high right now at $912 per share. It started the year at around $300, so it's a triple since the beginning of the year. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, you know, we've put out some pretty significant newsletters over the last several weeks as we've faced yet another crisis, basically a one-year anniversary of the last crisis, major crisis in the market, which was the war that Trump declared against the rest of the world with the tariffs that didn't go over so
April
well.
8th. Yeah, when did April 8th, where the NASDAQ went up, 12% in one day, I think, if I'm not mistaken. That was kind of the end of it. And then, of course, when we were in Sarasota, as you're presenting at the workshop, we had the news come across of the tentative ceasefire that we're kind of under right now. So.
Yes, exactly. And so two for two. And then we go back to the January call in 2023, and then we go back to the COVID call. That's four for four. I don't make a lot of market calls. I'm more interested in writing about individual stocks. But from time to time, when I see something that is very, very compelling, I make a market call. And that's the fourth one since 2020. And then the one before that was way back in 2009, in March of 2009, when I said a new bull market is being born. And now we're in the 17th year of that.
Been around.
Not a bad call. So I will, obviously, that's a big part of the newsletter. Every weekend is that macro outlook. And as we get ready for earnings season, which begins next week, I'll have some fresh numbers on what the expectations are. We've had a five-year high of companies guiding higher prior to this earnings season, which is pretty incredible. And we've seen the earnings estimates for 2027 now drift clear up to $372 per share. We were at $340. Not that long ago. What kind of magnitude is that? Well, 20 times 340 and you're at 6,800. Earnings drift up to 372 and that same 20 multiple gets you to 7,400. So it moves the target price considerably. And that has been the direction of earnings and earnings estimates. It's been much higher for quite some time. And there will come a time when the earnings estimates start to peak. the quarter-over-quarter comparisons start to get a little bit tougher, and we start to see downwards revisions to earnings estimates, a spate of them, and that has not happened yet. But that's what I'm on the lookout for every single weekend when I do the macro outlook of the newsletter. And the second most important part of the newsletter here recently has been the technical chart section, where I'm showing you, you know, where the support levels are on some of these indexes that got so cheap there and are still cheap, where the resistance levels are on every major asset class. That's also a very, very important part of the newsletter. And then, of course, if you get the four-week trial, you can see the four portfolios that we publish. We don't publish the bond portfolio because it's pretty static, pretty boring and static, which a lot of people like that. They like investing in boring and static. But
yeah, and you got different interest rate regimes, right? So there's certain times, right, where interest rates are very low. Obviously, those entry points are, you know, different level than if you started in 2022 where rates were higher. You're getting a better, you know. So it's a tricky one to show.
So that is the important. And then you can look at the portfolios of how the four, their four stock portfolios. Those are the four main products that we produce here. In-N-Out Burger produces a single burger, a double-double, French fries, and milkshakes. Four things. And they try really hard to do it really, really well. We try very, very hard to do those four portfolios really, really well. And the bulk of the money is in the three upper tier ones, the premier large cap growth portfolio, the next one down, which is the ultra growth portfolio, just one step below the large caps. And then the third one that we have a lot of money in now is that, is the relative value portfolio, where, you know, something like Palantir could fit in there at some point if it keeps dropping. But I take a look at where stocks have traded at historically from a PE ratio, and sometimes they come down to levels that are haven't been seen in a long, long time. And we've done really well since we started that that relative value. And a lot of times somebody can give us $100,000 and we'll put it into all three portfolios. We'll just kind of mix. We call it UG, PG, and VG, or RV, I guess. And when I find a stock in any one of those portfolios that I like, I buy it. And it's not going to be exactly a third. Yes, it's not exactly going to be a third. It will tilt towards whichever of those three portfolios, you know, it has the most opportunity at the current time. So it's a really good system. And pulling from three portfolios, you can fill up your portfolio a little faster than you can if you're just in one portfolio. So if you'd like to talk to us about the portfolios and how we would set them up for you, your asset allocation, give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. And, of course, the first thing I do is when you transfer an account to me, I weed it. I pluck it. I trim it. I get rid of, because I know a lot of people, it's hard for them to sell things. It's not hard for me. I don't like looking at bad stocks, and I get rid of them pretty quickly. Now, if they're moving well and doing well when I inherit them, and even though I don't like them, I'll wait till the chart starts to weaken and then get rid of them. So I try to get the most out of every position that we own when somebody transfers in a bunch of soggy stocks that aren't ones that we own. So 855-611-BEST to set up an appointment with us. Two, get a four-week trial to the newsletter, full access to the Best Stocks Now app, and the trading alerts for 30 days. Boy, I'll tell you what, no, I don't think anybody out there matches that offer that we make. You go to our website at GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com, and for all of you up in Bloomington area, Minnesota, we're coming there next in about 5 or 6 weeks. If you got a better suggestion than the Mall of America, we usually stay at that Radisson Blue. Drop us a line. Send me an email, Bill at Gunderson Capital, and suggest another spot if you think there's a better spot. Because that mall traffic ain't what it used to be. I know that. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.